I was watching the Emmy Awards, named after someone named Emmy or something. Emmy Awards for Excellence in Television. And I was thinking, you know, they got that. They've got the Oscars for Excellence in Motion Pictures. There's the Tony Awards. Tony! For Excellence in Broadway Plays. But there's nothing for radio. And then I realized that's because there is no excellence in radio.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
None. No excellence at all.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show is what this thing is called. Excellence in radio. Kinda. Sorta. You know, I was thinking about all these Republican schmuck radio people. That's what I call them, Republican schmuck radio people, because there are a lot of Republicans that have radio shows, and all they do for their entire program, some of them lasting 3 to 4 hours, it's the same thing over and over and over again about how great Republicans are and all the great things Republicans do and how evil and nasty and antichrist the Democrats are. They can't do anything. When they blow their nose, it comes out of their ass. That's what the Democrats think, although that's where the Republican talk show hosts tend to act. If you've ever listened to one of these Republican talk show hosts for their 3 or 4 hour spread, it's just a snooze fest. And I feel very bad for them, because they're incredibly ignorant. They make up stuff all the time. But more so, they're so limited because all they can talk about is Republican shit. That's all they can do. I, on the other hand, in my great wisdom, I can talk about anything in not only in the world, but any experience in life. I can even conjure up fantasies that don't even exist yet. Not that fantasies ever do exist. The world is at my feet. Where Republicans, all they can talk about is, oh, it's horrible, it's just horrible, and there's too much spending, and who needs gun control? I have a perfect right to carry a gun. I'll shoot you in the face if I want. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I feel very fortunate in that sense. And I don't know why I told you all that. It's just I find radio usually to be extremely boring. And I hope I don't fit into that category. If I do, please tell me. Not that you have any way to contact me whatsoever. Actually, you do. It's MetroSouthPodcasting@AOL.com. MetroSouthPodcasting@AOL.com. Yes, I have the sole remaining AOL account. Nobody else does. I'm the only one. That's why your email will get to me really fast, because AOL doesn't have to figure out, well, who do I send this to? They know I'm the only customer they have. So it goes immediately to me. Do you know at AOL, when you go on the AOL mail website, they actually have a human being sitting there at their computer going, bing, 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 bing. They actually do that in order to make AOL people feel very, very comfortable. They do that. They seriously do. So I had an experience yesterday with a foreign accent person on the phone. And I'll tell you why that's not a bigoted comment. First of all, I am a very multicultural man, very multicultural. I love people from all different cultures, from who speak all kinds of languages. As a matter of fact, when I was a very young adult, I fucked people from all different countries. I really didn't care. I was living in New York City, and it's the melting pot of the world, ladies and gentlemen. New York City is the melting pot. That's why people in New York are so hip and so urban and so progressive. It's because they are surrounded by the world every single morning when they wake up on the streets. And that's a very accepting, wonderful thing. So if there was a female who didn't speak English, I fucked her. It was what I did, and it was I was doing it for my country. And I, as a result, am a more international man right now. As a result, I have a true understanding for people from other countries intimately. Anyway, but I do have one rule in my silly little head, and that is if you live in the United States, you got to speak at least broken English. You have to at least do that cute little I'm trying to speak English thing, or as Sarah Palin would say, speak American. Yeah, the language of American, Sarah Palin. Oh my God. This woman lives in Alaska and her brain is like totally frozen. Anyway, this is humor to me. This is certain people were created and put on this earth for my humorous edification. That's the only reason they're here, and I think they know that. I expect Sarah Palin to walk up to me someday and go, you're Ron Van Dam? Yes. How am I doing? Am I making you laugh? Yes, you are, Sarah. Okay, good. That's what I'm on the planet for. I do insist, as me, that you speak at least some form of broken English. You sneak a few English words in there, and somehow, even though you're not speaking English, I can somewhat understand you. And this is only so we can at least get along, you know, at least so I can somehow communicate with you if I need to, or at least feel somewhat comfortable that you've made an effort to speak the language of your people here. You've tried to assimilate into society somewhat as best you could. However, people who live in the United States and don't speak English at all, or speak it to the point where I can't understand what the fuck you're saying, really need to get a little body check, like in hockey, you know. I mean, need to knock you onto the ice a little bit and, you know, make you understand. So I don't like telemarketing calls. I think they're an invasion of privacy. It's like walking down the street and having a stranger walk up to you and stick their face in front of your face and stop you in your tracks. You can't do that. I think I have a perfect right to hit you in the head if you do that. You're invading my body space, and you can't do that. That's in the Constitution. It's the 18th Amendment. You can't stick your face in my face. It's in there. It's also in the King James Bible, Leviticus chapter 3, paragraph 7. Thou shalt not stick your face into my face, punishable by death. It does say that. Adultery is punishable by death. Did you know that? I think I talked about that on the show last week. In Leviticus, it says if you commit adultery with another person, which is usually how adultery is committed, you shall both be put to death. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. So that's going to thin out the herd really big time if anybody plans to do anything about the fact that you're adulterous. you're gone, baby. And you ain't going upstairs, you're going downstairs. You know, I don't know why I said it like that. Anyway, so I get this call last night at about 7 o'clock at night. You don't call me at 7 o'clock at night. 7 o'clock, I'm walking around in my underpants, just about to brush my teeth. And not that I'm going to go to bed, but it's off limits now. You know, the business hours, after 5 o'clock, business hours are 9 to 5. If you want to sell me something on the phone, as much as I despise it, I can somewhat understand it between 9 and 5. After that, you can't call me. Business hours are over. Yeah, but Ron, telemarketers have to call in the early evening because that's when everybody's home. Well, that's your problem, not mine. Then leave me a message during the daytime hours and I'll call you back if I'm interested in your stupid little product. But you don't call me at night. You don't interrupt my dinner. You don't interrupt my TV watching. You don't interrupt my alcoholic rampage. You don't do things like that in the evening. You don't do it. So you're starting like really at a low level of confidence if you call me in the evening. But this guy did. And he calls me up. And I pick up the phone and I say, hello, hello. And I expect one of these stupid recordings because no one's got the time to bother me in person anymore. They can only bother me by recordings now. They don't even have the time. They don't even have the time. They're bothering me with a recording now. If you're going to bother me, at least have the courtesy of personally bothering me. So this guy, there's a guy on the other end of the phone and he's Indian. And I'm not talking about the type that cries on the side of the road if you throw a piece of garbage out of your car window. I'm not talking about that kind of Indian. I'm talking about the kind of Indian from India. Lovely people. Lovely people. Boy, can they make long movies. They're really great people. As Donald Trump would say, they're murderers, they're rapists, and I'm sure a few of them are just fine. That's what Donald Trump would say. Not me. That's what Donald Trump would say. Let's not confuse Donald Trump and myself. Anyway, I truly believe that this person was actually in India calling me because apparently he has Sprint and you can call other countries for free. I really don't know how that works. Or he's somewhere in the United States and I don't know where because it doesn't say on my phone exactly where he's from. But he still can't speak English. So he calls me up and he says in his India accent, would you like to? And I had no idea what the hell he was saying. And I said to him, I don't know who you are or where you're calling. I said this literally. I really did. I don't know who you are or where you're calling from, but I don't understand you. And here's the point. How can they be expected to sell me something when I can't understand what they're selling? And I'm not going to get into a thing like, what are you trying to sell me? Because I don't want to be sold anything anyway. So I said, I know you can't, I can't understand you, and I'm going to hang up on you now. And it's funny because when you have a language barrier, you raise your voice, you shout a little bit more as if they're also hard of hearing. In other words, people that don't speak English inherently also are hard of hearing, apparently. And we raise up. Would you like to? I'm sorry, I can't understand you. Would you like to be of a authority? I'm sorry, I can't understand you. As if the Indian guy on the other end of the phone is going to say, "Oh, you can't understand me. I couldn't hear you." They never do that. I'm on 87 do not call lists. DNC, and I'm registered with donotcall.gov. I call them every 10 minutes and to make sure that I am not to be called. I am on the do not call list, and it doesn't work because everybody still calls me. And apparently, if a company has called you before or you've had a business relationship, you've bought something from them in the past, they will call you anyway because they have already established a relationship. I believe that's the way that works. I don't know this guy from India. I don't know why he was calling me to this day. around this particular time of the year, I'm starting to get the political calls. Which I love. I love to screw with the political pollster people. Here's what they are. They are people that work for a particular candidate, but they disguise their phone calls as a political poll. And here's what took place a few days ago. I am now going to do some acting for you and create a scenario which occurred a few days ago. Good evening. Are you Ron? Yes, I am. Who are you?
I'm conducting a political poll. May I conduct it with you?
Oh, yes, indeed. You want my opinion politically? Why, you bet. Now I feel really important. Go on. Ask me anything.
All right. Are you familiar with Jeff Deal?
Jeff Deal. Yes, I am. I believe I know Mr. Deal. Yes?
If the election were held today, would you vote for Jeff Deal?
No.
May I ask why?
I don't believe in his theories of politics.
May I ask? Oh, shut up. Just hang up the phone.
You're with the Deal campaign and you're trying to get me to vote for him, and you're trying to see how many people vote for him so I know how much more money to spend on the campaign so that he wins the damn thing. I mean, give me a break. I'm not some type of slug that comes out from between the sidewalks and the little crack. I mean, I know what the hell you're doing. You might as well be speaking a foreign language to me. I'm not interested. Have a good day. Goodbye. And she's very pleasant, but I can't stand this crap anymore. I can't stand it. You have no right to invade my home with your phone calls. And then there's this lady that calls me all the time, and she says, I'm with cardholders something, and I'm with cardholders, and there's nothing wrong with your credit card, but we can offer you a low percentage rate for a loan that will... You can't do that. You can't stop me and tell me this shit unless I ask you about it. That should be the law. You can't tell me about your stuff unless I ask you about your stuff first. You can solicit me through magazines because I can throw them in the garbage anytime I want. And if I don't flip through them, I don't flip through them. And you can advertise in newspapers and do whatever you want on television, I guess, whatever you want to do. But you cannot call me because then you're specifically taking my time from something else. If I choose not to pick up the mail or read the mail at a particular time, then that's not an invasion of my privacy. When I go through my junk mail, I'm purposely invading my privacy by spending that time to go through that junk mail to weed out the stuff I'm going to throw in the garbage or the stuff I may be interested in. And believe me, I'm not interested in that much stuff. But when you call me and I pick up the phone, you have disengaged me from my life for a period of time. And let me tell you something. That pisses me off. So as soon as you call my home or my place of business and stop me in my tracks to focus on your little stuff, then I tell you, you are starting with a hostile situation with me. I am never going to be pleasant to you if you try to sell me something on your terms at your time. Let's get that straight. So unless you want to be played with or mind fucked by me, then don't call me. Don't use the telephone as a means of communication. And here's what I'm scared about, ladies and gentlemen. This scares me to no end. As bad as telemarketing is, there's one method that telemarketers don't use, and I fear someday they will. And here's what it is. Listen carefully, get a little closer to your speaker. Someday, and I don't know why they don't do this yet, they're going to be texting you. Yes, texting you. I guess they'll call it text-a-marketing calls. You will go on your phone, and it will say, you have a message. And you'll go to your text messages, and it'll be advertisers. It'll be people trying to sell you crap, just like they do on the telephone. And that's going to piss you off, big time. I have the luxury, somewhat of a luxury, of having caller ID. Sometimes it's a luxury. Frequently it's not, because telemarketers know that people aren't going to pick up the phone with the caller ID number coming up. So they call, it doesn't say, look who's calling. It's Jehovah's Witnesses. Oh, look who's calling. It's a guy from India trying to sell me life insurance. That doesn't come up on the caller ID, just a phone number. And I don't not answer the phone because I don't recognize the phone number. I mean, a lot of us are in business and use our cell phones for business calls, or we're at home and we don't know who's calling. It could be important. It could be one of our friends calling from another number. We don't know. So caller ID kind of sucks. All caller ID does is, if you know the number of the person that's calling and you don't want to talk to them, you don't answer the phone. And believe me, I get a lot of use out of that in that sense. Otherwise, caller ID really doesn't mean anything. It doesn't really help. Unless, again, you know that you recognize that number and you just don't want to talk to them. That's how caller ID helps. But otherwise, it doesn't. But in text messaging, it often doesn't say who's calling, and it often doesn't say who's texting. And some people will just text you, and it's important, and you told them to text you, but you haven't entered them into your contact in your cell phone yet, so it doesn't identify them by name yet. So one tends to look at their texts all the time. And the day the telemarketers start using the text thing, we're all in trouble. We're all in trouble. Of course, you can't text to a home phone number, but how many people have home phones anymore? Not a lot. Here's how many people have home phones. If you're over 40 years old, you have a home phone. If you're under 40 years old, you don't have a home phone. And if you do have a home phone, you don't use it. You only have a home phone because Comcast throws it in for another 10 bucks. Other than that, you wouldn't have it. You wouldn't have a home. You never use it. Who? Only people that call me on my home phone are my mother, my father, my sister doesn't call. My mother and my father and telemarketers. That's only people that will call you on a home phone. Everybody else will use the cell phone either through text messaging or through cell phone call. Let's face it, it's a fact of life. As we live and breathe, it's not a wonderful thing. We're not happy about it, but it is what it is, isn't it? Technology has taken us to this place. Technology has taken us to a place that we don't want to be, but we do it anyway. Home phone, over 40 years old. No home phone, you're a baby. You're a baby, man. You're young. You're young at heart. You're just a young little, thing walking around with young little pants on.
You're listening to Ron Van Dam on Metro South Podcasting. Oi, he's such a mensch. I mean, a nice mensch, don't get me wrong, but still, really, a mensch.
You know, I've talked to so many times about this, and I've had guests on the show talking about people that do these tours, tours of encouragement, I call them. And they're very similar to telemarketers, and they are usually entrepreneurs who have written a book, and they do some type of a tour where they charge people off the streets, like you and me. They charge them like 50 bucks or 20 bucks or even a couple of hundred bucks. And they stand up on a stage and they do motivational speaking. And for a while, motivational speaking was an incredible business, where these Svengali kind of people who had great ways of speaking, and when they talked, people just were drawn into them. They just listened. They could be talking about how to be successful in business or how to peel an orange with your face. It wouldn't matter. They were motivational people. There was something charismatic about them. When they got up on a stage or talked to you, you just melted in your seat. You just went, oh my God, oh, that is so motivational. I want to be you. I want to have your charisma. I want to be motivational like you. My life would be wonderful if I had a command of it just like you do, because you are so hypnotically incredible. and whatever you say, I hang on your every word, how you pronounce it, every single syllable. You are so amazingly involving with your motivational speaking. And there were people like this. And their accreditation was simply the fact that they had written a book that was fairly popular in their minds. And they would sell out these auditoriums and stand up on a stage with a little microphone, and they would walk back and forth, they would pace back and forth, and tell you how you could be successful, how your business could be successful, how you can have successful relationships in life, how life can be fulfilling for you, how you can get any job you want to get simply by focusing on it in your mind. Simply by thinking about what you want to achieve, you shall achieve it. And here is how it happens. And this is how you do it. And when you're sitting in this audience in these motivational speaking conventions, you are just captivated. The entire world is between that stage and your seat. And you say to yourself, as this motivational speaker is walking back and forth, looking so sharp, well-dressed, so successful, so confident, so amazingly perfect, you say to yourself, why can't I be him? Why can't I be her? I can be just like them. Damn it, I can do this. Damn it, I've got everything that they... Now I know the secrets. They're on stage and exposing all their motivational secrets to me. Now I can leave this auditorium and go out and conquer the world. And that's usually the final line of the motivational speaker on stage. Their last line in this hour-long presentation is usually this. Now go out there and conquer the world. And you go, yes, I can do this. I can conquer the world. I've got all the tools. I know all the secrets. And I can feel it. And I can feel my body just chomping at the bit to go out and get that job that I've always wanted. To go out and start that company I've always wanted to start. To go out and have that relationship I've always wanted to have. I can be perfect. I'm going to be just like the guy on the stage and nobody's going to stop me. And then you walk out of the convention room and you have a hot dog and you forget what the fuck the guy talked about for the past hour. And you walk outside and you go, I don't know. And maybe I don't know how to do this. I can't do what he does. Wait a minute. I can't do what he said. Or you go out on a job interview and I'm sorry, you don't have the job. What do you mean I don't have the job? I went to the motivational speaking thing. These are incredible people. They are like fortune tellers. They just capture you. They capture you. And the only feeling you get when you've left that auditorium is, holy crap, they just took $30 of my money and an hour of my life. And under my arm is their book, which is really a piece of crap. I've been taken. And that's why they're the winners, and you're not.
You can drive a car, be a movie star, any day of the week. You don't have to shout or walk about, you just have to speak. Say, baby, you just have to speak. You can fly a plane, maybe go insane, any day that you like. Everyone will say, have you been away? Everything is alright. Say, baby, everything is alright. Here he comes.
You think you can be a winner? No. You just lost $30. That's not a winner. That's a loser. You're a loser. One of the great things about the internet is that we are able to shop on the internet, which is good. Unless too many places get hacked, then it's really dangerous. And that's the old credit card problem thing, you know, using your credit card and then have people steal your credit card number. And now they not only steal your credit card, they'll steal your identity. They'll steal your car, they'll steal your identity, they'll steal your kids, they'll steal your face, they'll steal your pants. And I don't mind all of that, but when they steal your pants, that is so insulting. So let's talk about credit card fraud with Carolyn Balfany. She's with MasterCard, I do believe. Let's say hello to her. Carolyn Balfany is the Senior Vice President with MasterCard, and she joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. We're talking about everybody's favorite subject, credit cards. And I know a survey was recently done by MasterCard, and it was a bizarre question that was asked, or the results were bizarre. What did you find?
Well, so we were looking at the emotion of safety and security, and that's a little different maybe than we normally look at rather than the technology.
Mm-hmm. And how was the question posed? What was the survey question?
Well, there were a series of questions, and really what we were trying to understand is how consumers feel about the safety of their information and their payment information.
Yes.
Are they concerned about it? And are they concerned about it relative to other events that might happen to them in their lives?
Yeah, and apparently the results were that 55% of Americans would rather have naked pictures of themselves leaked online than have their financial information stolen, which kind of tells you that people don't want their information stolen.
That's right. It was a surprising statistic to some of us, but I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It just gives us a barometer for how strongly people feel about the safety of their information and how violated they feel when it is compromised.
Well, the interesting thing is nobody voluntarily gives up their vital information online, but a lot of people do voluntarily send naked pictures. So, you know, it's kind of a weird response. Although, I think some of us actually voluntarily give away our personal information, even though we're not aware that we're actually doing it, but we are kind of volunteering sometimes, aren't we?
That's right. That's something else we saw, is that when asked, consumers said that they were really vigilant about protecting their information.
Mm-hmm.
But then, in another breath, they confessed to doing things like using passwords the same across multiple sites, or accessing personal data from a public site, or doing other things that, as you point out, compromise the safety of our own information.
Yeah. Now, what is MasterCard doing about this? I mean, I know that around the clock, especially what with you do, that is a major concern in keeping your customers safe.
It is. We like to think that that's our job at MasterCard, is to worry about payment security so that our customers really don't have to. We're doing a number of things, and probably the most visible right now is transitioning to chip cards in the United States.
Yes. And what exactly is that? Explain what a chip card is and how it differs and what it does.
Sure. So it is the addition of a microchip right on the face of your card. So if you've received one, you can see that it's there. And what does it mean, really? It is a better level of security. Mm-hmm. When you use your chip card, every time you use it to make a purchase, it's creating unique data. Mm-hmm. And that matters because it creates an environment where it's virtually impossible for fraudsters to create either counterfeit transactions or counterfeit cards.
Okay. All right. But now if we give our credit card information over the phone to somebody to make a purchase, obviously the chip's not being employed there.
It is not, okay. if you're verbally giving your number. And you'll still be able to see your number on the face of the card.
Right, right. I get very concerned about the fraud end of it, where you don't know if you're talking to a viable merchant or not, and you're giving out information based on the fact that they say they are who they are. And there are even people that impersonate credit card companies and government agencies as well. People impersonate AOL and Gmail and such, asking for information. That's what scares me the most, is I've learned now not to trust anybody, and that's kind of a horrible way to live, I guess.
It is. What we recommend to consumers are a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One, right, you know, do business with organizations that you know.
Right.
Two, as you point out, if you're contacted, perhaps you ask to call them back at a number that is published to you, if it's on your card or on your statement or whatever the case might be.
Yes.
That way you know who you're speaking to. But last but not least is really, consumers should have confidence in using electronic payments because, like MasterCard, for example, you're never responsible for the fraud that happens. So, you know, you might be disrupted by it because you'll have to reconcile it with your bank, but you're ultimately not responsible for it.
Right. And also, with many of the cards, it actually pays to use the card. You can get money back and all that kind of, you know, there are various programs with that. I mean, I use cards all the time, without question, especially MasterCard. It's kind of like getting some free money back sometimes.
Absolutely. There are loyalty programs associated with cards. There's also a lot of benefits oftentimes associated with a card. So whether it's price protection or other insurance benefits.
Yeah.
And so it really pays for consumers to familiarize themselves with those benefits also.
Yeah. You realize, Carolyn, that you have like one of the most important jobs in the world, because if we use our credit card, our MasterCard, as currency, which we do, for everything now, even buy a donut and Dunkin' Donuts with a credit card, that becomes such a major player in our lives. I mean, it's the transaction of purchase. It becomes vitally important security-wise.
Well, we take that seriously, and the way we look at that is that that's our job, to look at payment security and to also look at how we make payments seamless. What we really want you to do is focus on living your life, going through your daily activities, and we're hoping that we can make that easier, faster, better, and that you really don't think about payments.
Yeah. Well, good. You know what? I will go on and live my life. Thank you very much. I will do it with my card as well. Thank
you. Terrific.
How do we get more information?
So certainly you can visit the MasterCard site. For consumers that are interested in chip cards and using those, which is going to happen very, very quickly, I recommend that they go to gochipcard.com. It's an industry site that was set up to give consumers information about how to use those cards and what to expect.
Excellent. Continue the good work. Very important. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lovely, 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 lovely with the credit card thing. Hey, it's time for us to be quiet.
Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Whatever.
That's great. That's a little message for you. We need a little quiet time, don't we? You know, in other countries, they actually shut down in the afternoon. My Latino friends take siestas. Spain, they take siesta. Siesta. Where, kind of somewhere in the middle of the afternoon, they say, fuck it, I've had enough of this. And they just go to sleep. They take their big sombreros, which is probably now just ball caps, and they shove it over their forehead, and they take a little nap. And then they wake up and they go, okay, time to go home. Not really productive situations, but whatever. You know what phrase I always loved? A productive cough. Well, that sounds productive. What? I'm dying here. Yeah, but you're producing phlegm, and you're a producer. Are you an executive producer? I'm an executive producer of phlegm. I produce my phlegm. I have a lot. Phlegm? Try to spell phlegm. You can't do it. You can't spell phlegm. Nobody can spell it. It doesn't begin with an F. It should, but it doesn't. Why not? Who put people in charge of words? And who said, nah, it's too easy. It begins with an M. It should be F-L-E-M, but no. No, I'm going to change that around. I'm going to put all kinds of silent letters on and letters that pretty much have nothing to do with it whatsoever. Just like the phone thing. A phone should be F-O-N-E. No, no. We're going to do a P-H on that. Phone. Just to screw people up. And then we're going to make coughing to the point where you're about to die. We're going to call that productive. That's going to be productive. I'm dying. No, you're producing is what you're doing. You're extremely productive. Are you productive with your life? No, I'm not. Well, you are with your phlegm. I'll tell you that. Your cough is productive. That's about the only productive thing in my life is my cough. And I guess that's good. I don't know. I'm out of time. And so are you. I'll be back again tomorrow, which time we'll spend some more time together and say time a lot more. Until then, I wish you peace. Make it a good day. Well, you know, do whatever you want. I'm suggesting. Finished. Come on now. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Did you find your cough to be very productive?
It was unbelievably painful.
Oh.